we're good?
Yes. All right.
Hi, everybody. I'm Joe, compulsive reader.
Hi, Joe.
Again, I apologize for not being here last week. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity again tonight. I have a little book of pictures here. It's there's big gaps in it because I've never been a big picture taker, and but there's some dates on the insides, and they're pretty self-explanatory. So, okay. I came into the rooms about 5 years ago, and I got abstinent 18 months and 1 week ago. Last week would have been a good night. Actually, it was my 18 month anniversary last Wednesday. During that time, I've released approximately 215 pounds, and it's been a miraculous journey these last 18 months or so. It's really been amazing. I grew up in New Jersey. I'm the oldest of four kids. My dad worked for a phone company. My mom stayed at home until I was about 10. She went back to school and became a nurse. She worked first at a psych ward in Red Bank, and then became a visiting nurse for a while. And after that, she went back to school again, and she became a computer programmer and actually went to work for the phone company also for the last part of her career. I went to Catholic school for all 12 years, 8 years of grammar school and 4 years of high school. I graduated in 1974 from Christian Brothers in Lincroft. And my dad was a very, very strict guy. He was never physically abusive, but looking back, I think that he was probably more emotionally and mentally abusive. He just was impossible to please. Nothing we ever did was good enough for him. There was a lot of him being in charge and us following his orders, and he made very clear who was in charge and who was not. And even now, he just turned 85 last week. And in the last year, I've gotten some new ink on my arms, and when I told him I was getting a second tattoo, he said, and I have to read, he said, "It shows a serious lack of judgment on your part." And it doesn't bother me like it used to, but it still does a little bit. And I said, "Dad, I'm 58 years old, and you know, I've thought about this a little bit, so you know." But it's just kind of a little example of what I went through growing up. When it wasn't terrible, but it was always part of what was going on. Nothing was ever good enough. I could have done better at school. My grades were really good. I graduated top 10 at a high school. It was probably about 225 kids. But you know, you could have been number one. You could have gotten a scholarship here. I ended up going to Rutgers, but I should have gone to Princeton, you know, all those things all through life. And even as time has gone on, I could have gotten promoted. I should be making more money. Maybe you should have done this. Maybe you should have done that. He was a heavy drinker, even up until he had a stroke about 2 years ago, and he finally stopped. And I would probably call him a functional alcoholic is what I would call him. And my mom always struggled with her weight. My whole life, she was always dieting, trying every kind of diet that there was, and she would kind of target diet. So for any event, she would be the lightest you've ever seen her for the whatever period of time it was, and then she would balloon back up. And it was Optifast and Weight Watchers and whatever was available, including she actually went to see the real Dr. Atkins in New York, and it was under his care for a while too. So I didn't really begin to struggle with my weight until college. I was a pretty skinny kid all through high school. I was pretty shy. Very socially awkward. I went to the all-boys high school. There were no girls around, and I was pretty sheltered also, with my dad really being kind of heavy-handed. I remember in the summer times, kids would be out playing till dark, and we would be in bed at 7:30, and I'd be listening to baseball games as everybody else was outside playing. And the summer after graduation, I was going to Rutgers, and right after graduation, I was going somewhere with one of my friends, and we had a pretty serious car accident. He turned left and we got hit. We got T-boned on my side of the car. And I was knocked out, knocked unconscious. I was out for about a day and a half. I had not a lot of other bad injuries. I had some head trauma, which they ended up fixing before I got out of the hospital. And I was able to recover before school started in the fall. And there were some side effects to that accident, which became more apparent as time went on. I ended up losing a lot of memories from the accident back. I don't remember the accident at all or any of the thing that happened that day or the couple of days before. And I have a real hazy memory of a lot of stuff that happened in childhood and throughout grade school and high school. My son goes to the same grammar school that I went to, and I walked the halls there sometimes, you know, when he was there, he's in high school now. And I really don't remember being there during that time. Things are familiar, but I don't really remember things. It's kind of unusual. I turned 18 my freshman year. The same year that I turned 18, Rutgers opened their first pub, and I pretty much, being away from home for the first time and pretty much never have done anything wrong my whole life, I kind of went crazy, and I basically ended up spending most of my time my freshman year at the pub and partying. I was able to get through the first year. I was smart enough to be able to continue to do it. Classes weren't as hard as they would get my sophomore year, and I passed everything, but I got grades that no one had ever seen from me before, and it was not a good situation at home with my father. He was not happy with me, and that before the school year ended, I had gotten a small settlement from the car accident, and me and two of my friends from school bought motorcycles, and it was not really in his plan for me to get a bike, and it was never really, I didn't ask him, I just did it. And we spent that whole summer riding. It was a pretty good summer looking back. And but you know, we were drinking, and it was probably a little too dangerous, and I'm probably blessed to still be alive after that summer. To start with, I didn't know what I was doing. I bought the bike over at Monmouth Cycles in Middletown, and I had never been on any kind of a motorcycle before, and they handed me the keys, and I took it outside and I rode it into the bushes. That was the first thing I did, and I dumped it the first week I had it. I slid on sand, and my friends lived in Keensburg, and I slid on a big pile of sand and dumped it. It was the only time I've ever dumped a bike, too, so I shouldn't say anything, knock wood. But so I went back to school, and I continued my drinking and partying, and never drugging, but drinking heavily, and eating. The cafeteria was a wonderful place, and I had my food plan, and I basically was on the way to failing out of Rutgers by the time my sophomore year ended. It was a real odd situation for me. It was something I had never happened before, things like that, and not my family, my parents didn't really know how to handle it, and there was a lot of stuff that went on, and basically, my dad packed my stuff up and put it on the front porch and tossed me and said, we're done. We're not paying for school anymore. We're not paying for anything. You're out. And so I took my meager belongings and I put them on my bike, and I went back to New Brunswick, where I had been living with some friends in an off-campus apartment, and I kind of crawled back to them. It was five guys in a one-bedroom apartment. And I think my rent was about $50 a month or $55 a month. It was a long time ago. I'm pretty old. And I had to figure out what to do. And what I did is I went to a temp agency, and I got a bunch of temp jobs. And there were some that really stand out. When it got cold and snowy, I went over. They would take us over to the Ford plant in Edison, and we shoveled snow out of the railroad cars where they loaded the new cars, which was hard because the railroad cars were only as tall as the cars. So I would have to bend over because I was pretty tall to actually shovel out the snow, and I did that for a couple of weeks. It was crazy. Another job I had was at a ceramic chemical lab, and they were doing some kind of experiments on ceramics, and I would carry I would dump ceramic material up in this big kiln up on the third floor. And then I would walk down to the first floor and shovel it back into these buckets and carry it back upstairs and dump it back into the kiln. And I did that for weeks also. And it was anything basically to pay the bills at that time. I was still partying as much as I could with as much money as I had. I was looking for a full-time job. I found one with the city, with the New Brunswick Parking Authority. It was a pretty good job at the time, actually, for me. I was doing a lot of different things. I was doing, I worked the attendant, the booth. I was in a booth attendant. I did maintenance, replacing the, you know, it was old-fashioned fashion, so there was actually somebody there taking tickets. And I would replace gates when people drove through them. We would shovel snow and salt before things happened. And it was actually a pretty good job, and I got health insurance through the job. I was able to get a car and get my own insurance, and it really kind of put me on my feet. I was there for about a year, and I ended up finding a job in the paper again. It was both times, the first time too, and I got a job at a place in Edison at a small manufacturing company, and it was for a data entry person, My major was computer science, and so it was not really computer science. I was there. We put in inventory and do invoices and different things like that. And there was, I think, three people there when I started. And through an odd series of events, the person who was the supervisor, he was actually an alcoholic and got fired, and they brought someone else in who didn't work out. And I happened to be like the last person standing. So they said, okay, now you're in charge. And it actually worked out well. I was good at it. I understood what was going on. And I ended up having two or three people working for me. And that ended up being, you know, a very good thing. And I had my own apartment in Edison. And but I was continuously drinking and eating. And we would drink at lunchtime. It was like insanity. We would go out for lunch and we would drink and we would come back to work. I would work a ton. I was on a softball team. We'd go out after softball. It was kind of crazy. And I ended up, I ballooned from about 175 when I left school to about 300. And then in 1982, I dropped over 90 pounds during one summer. And it was literally in 90 days I dropped almost 100 pounds. And I did it by starving and exercising. That's what I did. It didn't make any sense, but one of my friend's wives at the time, she said all she remembers me eating during that whole summer was strawberries. She said, that's all I ate. And it's possible because that was a lot of weight to lose pretty fast at that time for me. During that same time, I had a couple of not real good relationships. One with a girl that I'd been in school with, who was she was separating from her husband, and eventually did separate from him. And I was still involved with her while she was still married, and she actually ended up moving to California, and I continued to have a semi relationship with her. My son's new and first girlfriend lives in Jackson. We live in Middletown, and I tell him that it's geographically undesirable, as I know from someone living in California, me living in New Jersey. And but that finally ended after a while. I'd actually went out there a couple of times when she was out there, and then I had started something with one of the women I worked with, who I had who it was, I'd seen before, early on when I started there. She got married, and the same person who remembers me eating the strawberries, she would chastise me. She knew what was going on with everything, and she would tell me, "I don't know what you're doing. You got to stop doing this." And I knew she was right, but I just kept doing it. It's two of the things that I regret almost most in my life, besides everything else. And it's something that once I get to it, will be big amends to be made with these people. And I'm almost looking forward to doing it because it bothers me so much. So at the end of 1982, after I'd lost all the weight, I got fired. And I think that part of it was the relationship I had with this person, and it was pretty common knowledge, and also I had a really bad relationship with the guy who ran the company, which wasn't a good thing. It was a small company. And I pretty much thought I was irreplaceable, and it turned out that I guess I wasn't. And so I was out. I was collecting unemployment. My dad, being the kind-hearted fellow he was, and very unhappy I still hadn't graduated from college after all these years, said that he would pay for me to go back to college. And I was just not in a spot that's what I wanted to do. And he wanted me to go to Manhattan. It was a specific place. He wanted me to go to Manhattan College. It's where he graduated from. And it was a Christian Brothers school, and I went to the Christian Brothers High School. I didn't want to do it. I talked to my mom. I had kind of been estranged from them for a few years, mostly talking to just my sister during that time. But I got back in touch with my mom. I got back in touch with my father, and we had a pretty okay relationship at that point. And my mom convinced my dad to help me get a job with AT&T where he was working. He got me an interview, and I was able to. There was a bunch of tests at that time you had to take to get into the data processing IT department, and I passed them okay. And I actually got a job in 1983 at AT&T. I met my wife at AT&T, and we got married in 1987. We both traveled a lot the first 5 or 6 years we were married. First her for a long time, and then me for a long time. She wanted to have kids. I was very apprehensive. I was very apprehensive about it. I didn't want the responsibility. I didn't think I'd be a good father. I'm still not sure if I'm a good father or not. And it's something that was a real issue between the two of us. We finally decided sometime in around 95 to start trying, and she got pregnant, and she miscarried after about 3 months. And it was a pretty tough time for her and for me, and at about the same time, both my brother and sister had kids, and my brother's wife was having her second child, and it was real tough on my wife and on me. She got pregnant again in 99, and my son was born October 8th, 1999, in the little book. You see me standing there in my little scrubs. He was 8 weeks early. He ended up being pretty big for how early he was, and he ended up spending 4 weeks in the NICU. Couldn't keep his temp up. Was on a. He had what they called shallow breathing. They put him on a monitor all the time. He went home on a monitor. The last thing we did it in was at Monmouth and Long Ranch. We did the pediatric CPU class in case he stopped breathing, and we had to bring him back to life. And they said if the wires ever come off while you're driving, the alarm will sound and it may startle you. So don't drive off the road. That's literally what they told us. While he was in the hospital, it gave me time and my brother and some of my friends to help to finish the nursery. We hadn't done anything because it was so early, but it was kind of a stressful situation, and I had just had hernia surgery too right before he was born, and I remember me and my wife, she had a C-section, were waddling down the hallway together because I couldn't. My mom had to drive me to the hospital the first week or so, but I still wasn't able to drive, and it was tough. But it was tough, but he was good, and he was one of the biggest babies in the nursery, and the people there were fantastic. The NICU, the nurses in the NICU are unbelievable. They're like angels, and my aunt is a Felicia nun. She's in her mid-90s now, and I swear that it was her prayers that got him through everything and my wife through it. So 2000 started, and it started a stressful time with him, the new baby, and with my job. And I was about 240 at that time. I was probably 230 when we got married. I was up and down all during those years, and I probably swung 25-40 pounds up and down all during that time. And I would starve myself. That's how I always got back down to somewhere where it was a little bit better. And it was about 240 when he was born. I got outsourced to a different company in 2000. Had the same job that I had, never changed offices, never changed bosses. During the next 9 years, there was probably four layoffs that we went through all these different machinations. That you know, all these little programs and processes, who's necessary, who's not. One time we had to go up to Piscataway for a month, and they called it lean. They called it, and they said, "We're just checking the processes. We're not, you know, this is not to get rid of anybody." And of course, at the end of it, they laid a bunch of people off. I escaped every time somehow. 2009, AT&T, they insourced me back, which I never expected, because of the circumstances. I ended up losing my pension. I don't have a pension now because of it. I got some things back. They bridged some time for some of the stuff. And starting almost right away, they started to lay us off again. During that time, my weight just ballooned. You can see in the pictures, I went up to probably the 400-pound area, but I had no scale that it would measure me, so I didn't really have any idea. And I did endless things during that time to try to lose weight. My mom helped me because she did this. She was doing the same thing, and it was Weight Watchers and OptiFast, Weight Watchers and Nutrisystem and Atkins and South Beach and Jenny Craig and Lean Line and Little Drinks and it was anything and everything. And at one point I did OptiFast and I lost probably 80 or 90 pounds. I was down to the lowest I had been in a long time. And the doctor I was seeing, it was under doctor's care, got arrested for selling Oxy. And there went my OptiFast program. And it was like the food gods were saying, "Oh, you're going to be a fat guy forever, man. There's just no other choice for you." And about 2010, my mom, her sister-in-law's brother, ended up losing a lot of weight by going to OA, and she suggested that I go to OA, and so I did, and I went to a Saturday meeting in Red Bank, and I ended up. Going to the Monday night meeting in Shrewsbury, and I met a lot of nice folks, and I would stop on the way back from Shrewsbury at whatever fast food restaurant I had coupons with, and I would eat on my way home. My wife would say, "How was the meeting?" And I said, "The meeting was fine." And the meeting was fine, but I continued to eat. I can eat through it. I eventually got a sponsor, and I had a food plan, and I would commit my food every day, and I would lie to her that I was following it, and it was I feel worse about things because I was lying to her and lying to myself, and it was just not good. I continued to go to meetings. She ended up relapsing, and couldn't be my sponsor anymore. After a time, I got another person as my sponsor. It didn't work out at all. It ended pretty badly with him. And I said, this is just not working well, and I ended up and I stopped going for a while. I stopped attending meetings. About 2.5 years ago, it's when I kind of hit rock bottom. And my mom had passed about 2 years before from pancreatic cancer. She basically wasted away before they diagnosed what it was, and she passed away in about 6 weeks after they diagnosed it. A little while, about 2 years after that, about 2.5 years ago, my wife had an incident at work where they thought she had a stroke. She was disoriented. She didn't know what was happening. She knew where she was, but she really didn't know when she got there or what happened. Her boss called me for some reason, and I said, call an ambulance and get in the hospital. She works in Freehold. She went to Center State. I called my sister because I couldn't drive. I was so upset, and her and my brother-in-law took me over to the hospital. And she was already in the exam room, and they had done a CAT scan already, and they were still waiting for the results. And I went in, and she said, "Where am I? What's going on?" And I said, "You're at the hospital. You had something happen at work." And they called me, and were waiting for the results of the test. And she said, "I'm so glad you're here," and held my hand. And about 30 seconds later, she said, "Where am I? And what am I doing here? And what happened?" And it happened over and over and over again. She had about a 2-minute memory. And what they finally diagnosed it as was something called transient global amnesia. It was not a stroke. They don't know what causes it. And it lasted almost 5 hours. And she doesn't remember anything that happened during those 5 hours. They admitted her for a couple of days, and they did more tests, and she doesn't remember being admitted. And I remember the person doing a memory test with her said, was talking to her and asking her questions, and she couldn't remember. I mean, once the thing started, she couldn't remember anything as time went on. And then she never even remembered that the woman came in and she took the test. And the woman said to me, "Well, if it continues like this, she'll have to come in for some memory therapy." And I said to my sister, "Memory therapy? What are we going to do? What do you mean memory therapy?" And it's just, I don't know if anybody saw that movie 50 First Dates, where she had a whole day memory. It was the same thing, except she had there was a guy in the movie, they call him 10 Second Tom or something, but my wife was 2-minute Carol. It was like just brutal. I mean, but thank God that's all it was, and she ended up going to other neurologists and heart doctors, and they never found anything, and they said it may never happen again. But it started a long time and still goes on where I need her to text me when she leaves. She texts me when she gets to work. I worry about it constantly happening again, as she does. She didn't get on her motorcycle for over a year because she was concerned about it. And it was just pretty stressful. Right after that happened, I was surplused for the second time in 2 years. Which at AT&T means you have 60 days to find a job. The year before, I had found a job pretty quickly. There were pretty many available. It was more of a reorg type situation. In a few years before then, I had to train my replacements while they decided whether they would lay me off or not. They ended up not laying me off. They laid off other people, and I had to take over those people's work. It was day after day and month after month there. And after the incident with her happened, I got down to the last day when I was off payroll, and the HR folks called me on the morning. It was Halloween of 2 years ago, and they told me that it was there was a job offer coming, and they canceled my exit interview for that day at noon, and they said it may not come today, so we're going to have to put you on an unpaid leave because you don't actually really work for anybody after today, so no one can pay you because you're not in any real organization. But the paperwork came through. I signed it. I was able to stay. They had canceled all my IDs. I couldn't get in the building the next day. I couldn't get on my laptop. My phone was dead. Everything was gone. It took me about a month to get back to normal. The woman who hired me, I don't exactly know why she hired me. I don't know how I got that job. Everyone I worked for with at that time and had for about 10, since 2000 basically, everybody got laid off. My last two bosses, all my friends. It was unbelievable, the carnage. And I was saved for some reason. And at that point, we really prepared for it to happen again. And it happened again a couple of weeks ago. And I'm off payroll December 18th. And there's no jobs to be had this time. But I am in such a better place because of the 2 years of working and because of my last 18 months of abstinence. And it's been a difficult time there since about 2000. And after that I got the job and I was heavier than I had ever been. My dad had a stroke in March, a pretty serious stroke. But unbelievably, the incident with my wife helped us because both my sister and I knew what the stroke signs were now. And we knew the stroke protocols. And she was in his car when it happened. And we rushed him to the emergency room. She did, with my brother-in-law. We got the medication in him. And while it was a real serious stroke, it was another miracle. The medication snapped him back to normal almost immediately. He has some damage. He's in his 80s, but it's again, he's still functional and still living by himself right now. It was really and truly amazing. Shortly after that, in April of that was March. In April of that year, my wife and my sister and my dad called me. They called. You know, my dad said, "Come on over for dinner or something," and we went over there, and it was just those three and me. And my sister said that you've got to do something. They had they had an intervention for me because of my weight. My blood pressure was through the roof. My doctor had doubled my medication twice. I was isolated. I didn't go anywhere. I was wearing rags basically because nothing fit. I was able to work from home all the time. I didn't have to go in. I couldn't walk from the car to the house. When I actually did have to go in the office, I would have to stop in the parking deck at the door and then in another spot in the building before I could get to my office, even to get to the elevator. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. And my sister said, "I saw this place on Dr. Phil called Structure House in North Carolina." And I said, "Okay, yeah." So I said, "I don't want to go. I can't take time off from work. I just started this job a few months ago. I don't want to, you know, become a target. I don't know if it'll get paid for." And they said, "Look, none of that makes any difference. You have to go." I was brutal with my wife whenever she brought anything up. So somebody else besides her really had to do something, and they did. And it was my sister and my dad. Insurance ended up not paying for it. My dad paid for it all. It was a little over $10,000 for the 4 weeks. Work wouldn't give me any time off. They wouldn't disable me. Besides not paying for it, I had to take vacation. And I had used up some vacation earlier, so I actually had to take time off without pay to go. I drove down there the first weekend of May, and my wife was worried because I had bad sleep apnea, and she was afraid I would fall asleep, which I often did. As I was idling at a light, I would fall asleep. And I made it down there safe and sound. I binged my way down there. I laughed because I said that I was brushing biscuit crumbs off of me as I walked up the steps to the house, to the big main building. And I don't know what it was, but I ended up I ended up weighing in the next day. It was May 4th, 2014. And it was my first day of abstinence that day. They gave me a food plan. I weighed 456 that day when I weighed in. And that was from 175 leaving college. And 456 is big, and I was headed towards my 600-pound life if I had lived that long, which I don't believe I would have at this point. I always say it was a mixture of 50% nutrition classes, 50% emotional, and 50% fitness. I couldn't do any fitness. I could barely walk. I had to change my room the first day I got there. I couldn't walk up the stairs to the little garden apartment. It was super embarrassing, as everything was at that point. But I said, I'm here. My wife was taking care of stuff at home. My son was in eighth grade. I missed his confirmation. I had scheduled it so I'd get back in time for his eighth grade graduation. And I ended up throwing myself into it, and it was kind of like going back to school, but high school for me, not college, because college didn't go well. Mm-hmm. And for 4 weeks, I didn't miss a class. I didn't miss a therapy session. I had 2 or 3 hours of therapy a week, a couple of group sessions a week. And after 4 weeks, I had lost 35 pounds. They had OA meetings on Sunday mornings in the building, and I went back on the, I checked in on a Sunday, and I went back, I went to the OA meeting the next Sunday. I led the two Sundays after that because it was Memorial Day weekend and nobody was around. They said, Joe, do you want to lead? And I said, I absolutely want to lead. I even ran a newcomers meeting first, which I did, and there was a newcomer there that day. And while I was down there, I went back to church, which I hadn't really been doing. I went to confession, which I hadn't done since I don't know when. I'm Catholic, as I said. And I spent a couple of hours with one of the priests there who was from this area, and it really got me connected back with my higher power and with my religion roots, which was I never really expected to do again, and back into the program. It got me back into the program too, What I believed when I left there was that I had a plan that worked, and that I could do it and I could be successful at it. And I still follow that food plan to this day. It's been tweaked a little bit since then. It really showed me that it could be done, and that I could do it. And they gave me tools there that I could use, and OA gave me another set of tools I could use. And I've been back twice since then, once last October and once this October. There's pictures in the book from those times. And this last week in October, one of the therapists said that you need a toolbox of tools to use to continue to be successful at this. And I just feel like my toolbox overflows with the things I got from them, with the things I get from OA. And I told my therapist, I had a new therapist. My old therapist that I started with left over the summer, which was a little traumatic for me. Even though I don't talk to her all the time, I send her back a journal every 2 months about how I'm doing, how my weight is, and different how I feel about things, how the food is going, what my triggers are, and how I'm handling different things. But I told the new therapist that my toolbox used to just have two things, and it was a knife and a fork, and now I have the tools and the support from everyone and everywhere I need to continue to be successful. As soon as I got back, I went back to the Monday night meeting in Shrewsbury. I go to the Thursday night meeting in Red Bank pretty often. And I sometimes come to this meeting, and once in a blue moon go to Saturday meeting too. I also went back to Weight Watchers, which I know a lot of folks don't, I know a lot of people call it pay and weigh, but I like I need to weigh in. It's like an official weigh in for me. It's part of the program down in North Carolina to weigh yourself fairly often, and I continue to do that. It's another group of folks that are supportive of me and with me, and I text and I call OA folks, and I'm on Facebook with the Weight Watchers folks, and we do a lot of different things together too. So, I guess the most important thing for me is to take step one every day and admit to myself that I'm a compulsive overeater and that I literally have no control over my food, that I need to follow these steps every day. And there's no more half measures for me. I am all in all the time now. My program and my abstinence is the most important thing for me. That's why getting laid off in a few weeks, I hardly even care about it. I'm in such a better place now than I was. I can go out and get another job if I have to. I'm able to do so many different things because of it. And it's a miracle to me that I'm like this now. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little lost here. My recovery is the most important thing for me. If I don't take care of myself, I will not be there for my family and others. All the little sayings, one day at a time, just for today. I live by all those things. It's really important to me. Progress, not perfection. It's all those things. It took me a long time to realize that I'm an overeater and I'm always going to be a compulsive overeater, and none of that's going to change. I have to accept that, and I have to move on from that. I finally in the past couple of months have gotten a new sponsor, and I started finally to work the steps, and it took me a long time to do it, and that's why I have never qualified before and never actually talked too much in meetings. And it's because I just didn't feel comfortable, because I didn't feel I was really working the program like it was supposed to be worked. And but I needed to get to a place where I was comfortable to do that and healthy enough to do that and felt confident enough in my program that I could do that. And I'm not cocky about it, but I'm comfortable that I can continue my abstinence. And it's been 18 months, which is a drop in the bucket for me, and but it's been a miraculous 18 months for me. It really has. I'm sorry. I'm getting lost again. Just bear with me a minute. A lot of folks say that it's not about the weight, and my level of critical obesity made it so far about the weight for me, in large part. And I always like to say it's not about the weight for me. But as time has gone on, I'm off all my meds, my blood pressure, my triglycerides are my triglyceride medication, and And because I'm physically now so much in better shape, I'm able to concentrate on the rest of my program. And that's kind of what I'm starting to do. So I have a new sponsor. It's just a step sponsor. We're just working through the steps. I don't call my food in, right? I haven't since I started back. I keep a food diary that I send back to this place every 9 weeks, and I use them as kind of my reporting my food to them. It's going to be a long process for me to finish the steps. I don't know if I worked them enough or worked them as much as I should, but I work them in the time I'm able to work them and in the time I need to work them. It's not a race for me. I'm in this for the long haul right now, and because of that, I'm going to finish. But for me, it's the progress that I'm making every day. And that I continue to make, and that I keep my abstinence, and that I continue to that I now I'm continuing.